very good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world. And thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM from wherever you may be listening to us from. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Radar, your trusted source for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. This isn't just about headlines. On The Radar is a space for deep, meaningful engagement where we interrogate the stories shaping our country. We ask the odd questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots using archived audio, expert opinion, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Our interviews are long form and in depth because some stories deserve more than sound bites. Now we come prepared with the facts, the context, and your questions so that every conversation takes us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath. Now remember, On The Radar is available across our Eagle FM national radio frequencies, our Eagle FM website, as well as Eagle FM, app. Now, do subscribe to our WhatsApp channel as well for real-time updates, interview highlights, and exclusive clips. Don't forget to subscribe to Eagle FM Namibia on our Facebook page. So stay with us and step beyond the surface. This is On The Radar, where Namibia comes to think. Now, let's get right into today's news bulletin today. Once the ideological engine of African unity, liberation, and dignity, Pan-Africanism is showing signs of strain in the 21st century. Rooted in the belief that people of African descent share a common history and future, Pan-Africanism champions solidarity, respect, and mutual upliftment. But as modern political discourse turns increasingly combative, critics are questioning whether these founding ideals are fading or even dying. Now, this concern was recently reignited following remarks made by Landless People's Movement LPM leader Bernardo Swartboy toward Minister of Health and Social Services Dr. Esperance Luvindao. The public outrage, widely criticized for its tone and personal nature, has raised questions about the illusion of Ubuntu, mutual respect, and ethical leadership within Namibia's political landscape. Now, while political disagreement is central to democracy, observers argue that personal attacks, particularly when directed at women in leadership, reflect a deeper departure from Pan-Africanist values, which emphasize dignity, unity, and liberation through shared struggle. Now, this is not just about what was said, one would say, it's about what it signals for nation building, gender equality, and respectful governance. Pan-Africanism has long provided a framework for both continental solidarity and global diaspora engagement. Milestones such as the founding of the Organization of African Unity, also known as OAU, in 1963, and the rise of the African Union, AU, have translated these values into formal structures aimed at peace, economic integration, and development. Globally, the movement has supported civil rights, anti-colonial struggles, and Afrocentric education and cultural revival. But in recent years, Pan-Africanism risks become more symbolic than substantive. Friends in speeches, but abundant in practice. Rising nationalism, internal political rivalries, xenophobia, and gendered power struggles are undermining the unifying philosophy. If leaders across the continent cannot model values and mutual respect, shared identity, and collective progress, the promise of Pan-Africanism may slip further than reality. The danger lies not in open debate, but in how that debate is conducted. When it loses the moral compass of Ubuntu, the principle of I am because we are, as public confidence in political leadership wavers, and as younger generations grow up in a fractured political culture, the risk is that Pan-Africanism may die, not through opposition, but through neglect. Still, its future is not sealed. Reviving Pan-Africanism requires intentional leadership, respectful dialogue, and policies rooted in inclusion and dignity. It calls on those in power to lead by example and on citizens to demand a politic that reflects the best of African values. As Namibia reflects on recent political tensions, the question remains, are we building towards unity or drifting away from the very ideals that once bound us together? Well, let's interrogate that now. And I'm now joined by Toivo Njebela, editor-in-chief at the Namibian Sun. Let's take a listen.
Good afternoon, Toivo Njebele, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Juju.
Now, Toivo Njebele, we're talking about the death of Ubuntu and Pan-Africanism. And this comes into light now because of recent remarks that a leader of LPM, Bernardo Swaboy, made towards Minister of Health, Esperance Luvindao. Now, from a media perspective, Toivo, are this just a politics as usual, or do they signal something deeper about the tone of public discourse in Namibia?
Yeah, so... I was a bit surprised by the choice of words by Bernardo Swaboy, whom I consider to be a radical leftist politician. I mean, his posture, whether now as an LPM leader or even during his time in the Swapo Party Youth League, he was always a man on the left, radical left, and what that entails usually is Pan-Africanism, is looking beyond. I mean, if you look, for example, at similar politicians or politicians of similar ideologies like Julius Malema, are calling for a united Africa, a borderless Africa. So you would think that someone from that kind of political, ideological, the way they were brought up in that kind of political thinking would have a different posture. So it's a bit confusing that a person like him, if he was coming from a party like PDM, which is more of a centralist party, or liberal party, you could say might be, you could understand, but for him it was a bit baffling. I think it was completely unnecessary to mention the minister's nationality. I think personally that Minister Luvindao is a Namibian citizen.
Yeah.
And if my parents, if I was born here in Namibia, to Namibian parents, and you became Namibian. I mean, in her case, the story seems to be that she was born here to Congolese parents, but she's a Namibian citizen as far as we understand.
Yeah.
Unless Mr. Swaboy is saying that he has evidence contrary to the claim that she's Namibian. If that is his point, then I can understand. But that is not what he seems to be saying. He simply does not accept that somebody born, a Namibian person born to foreign parents, does not equate to him, which is wrong.
Yeah.
Once you are a Namibian citizen, it doesn't matter how you became, whether you are a native who was born here, or you are naturalized, or whatever. Once you are Namibian, you are Namibian, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, some argue that the personal nature of the comments crosses a line. Now, in your editorial opinion, when does political critic turn into harmful rhetoric, and how should media navigate that boundary?
Yeah, so, I mean, everybody who follows my kind of thinking, because at least in my case, my views are very public. I write a column, editorial every day in Namibian Sun, and my views are always contained there.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that I'm an absolutist when it comes to free speech.
Mm-hmm.
I defend free speech with everything that I have. I put my reputation on the line. I put my perceptions against me out there, because it is one thing, it's the small sacrifice that I can make to say, even if maybe people misinterpret what I'm saying and therefore paint a negative picture of me, it's okay. But I'm an absolutist when it comes to free speech. So I want opposition leaders who go all out and hold, especially those that are running the country, accountable, to say that if you are a minister, there must be a robust scrutiny of your work. There must be a robust scrutiny of your policies and your implementation and even your performance. Mm-hmm. So that one, I'm there with everybody who does that. Just like we in the media hold everybody accountable, including Mr. Swartboy,
yeah,
himself as an opposition party leader, because it shouldn't just be SWAPO leaders or government leaders that must be scrutinized. We must scrutinize everybody, because everybody is accountable to someone. So,
yes.
So it was not wrong for Mr. Swartboy to, because he seems to have been raising an issue about some of the minister's rhetoric, introducing AI to run ambulances or something to that effect. I don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that it's, pies in the skies kind of approach. And he was critiquing that. He said, that is okay.
Yeah.
But the moment you delve into, oh, she's a Congolese. And then he even went on to say something about she being black.
Mm.
As if to say that if she was any other race, it would have been acceptable. But being born to Congolese parents and you are black, it's wrong. In fact, there's a post on social media that I read this morning accidentally. It was not in preparation for this interview.
Yeah.
But of someone saying LPM in the South, I think they are referring to Mr. Labshakne, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I think he's a Kietman's rural councillor for LPM.
Okay.
These people are saying, this guy was born, he's an Afrikaner man, of course. They are saying he was born in South Africa. Of course, he must have come here as a small child, and which is perfectly fine. But his parents are South African, and he was born there, and they came here when he was a child, and now he's a councillor. And Mr. Swartboy is looking away in that regard. Again, I do not know the veracity of that. Maybe it's not true.
Mm.
But there's a general accepted scenario in Namibia where a lot of people in our country, especially the white community, they were not born here.
Mm.
But we have accepted them as our brothers and sisters because they came here as children, or some of them were born here by parents who are South African.
Yeah.
Or any other foreign country, but because they come from that privilege, we are always scared, or we think that one is holier than others.
Mm.
But for a kid who grew up here, did her entire schooling here, went to the medical school at UNAM, started practicing here, and now suddenly we are pointing out her Congolese background as if it was a sin of some sort, I think it's going overboard.
Yeah. Jabala, is the Namibian law doing enough to highlight when political actors contradict the values they claim to stand for, especially when it comes to Pan-African or liberation rhetoric?
Yeah, so one of the things that I do not really like personally as a free speech person is is using laws to control free speech. I do not, because there will be mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think what happened with Mr. Swartboy was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't, even in his wrongness, I wouldn't want a situation where the law is being evoked to deal with him, quote unquote.
Okay.
I still want Mr. Swartboy and myself and yourself and all your listeners to be able to critique and even criticize, even harshly,
mm-hmm.
our leaders, to say, Minister, you are wrong.
Mm.
President, you are wrong. Even if you must put a bit of a rude word, not an expletive, not an insult.
Yeah.
But even if you must put in a word that is not very kind, we must be a country that tolerates this because people are frustrated. But we don't want the situation if Michael Amshalelo puts something on social media and he says we have a weak president or a weak minister or a captured minister or whatever, those kind of words that quickly we run to the law and say, oh, how can we punish this person? Because once we adopt that as a tendency in our country, things will really, really go bad. So I think that a person like Mr. Swartboy at his level ought to know what he was saying. I mean, he ought to know his boundaries, because free speech also has boundaries. And he shouldn't have xenophobic attacking the minister like that. I thought that was completely out of order.
Ndebela, how do you suggest we keep everybody in check and balance, and we don't go overboard? As much as freedom of speech is something that we truly value in Namibia, how do we perhaps now navigate this road that we are on now, perhaps like sort of like a crossroad, to make sure that everybody is actually adhering to the freedom of speech with respect and ethics, upholding high standards of ethics?
Yeah, I think what we need to do is just to have conversations like this, where we say that, Mr. Swartboy, you cross the line, you are wrong. Toivo, you cross the line, you are wrong. That is the kind of way that, those who listen will listen. They will reflect and say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe it was a poor choice of words. Maybe I should have crafted my words differently. For me, that should be the only way, because we are not children. We are adults, and when a mistake is pointed in how we speak or how we write articles, those of us that are in the press, you reflect. We only fight when it's absolutely necessary to say, no, I stick to my words. If you analyze everything and you say, look, I stick to what I say, that's okay. In terms of law, let's be clear. In terms of law, there's no law that Mr. Swartboy actually violated. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah.
There's no law that says he may not mention the perceived nationality or the health of the health minister. If that is how he see her as, it's fine. There's no law that would have dealt with that. But I'm only saying that, as far as I know, Minister Lumindao is not Congolese. She might have her roots in that country, but so are so many other people in this country. There's a classic example that I want to share with you if I still have a bit of time to say that this week in the USA, there's a man now who is about to become the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
He's a Muslim man who was born in Kampala, Uganda, went to South Africa a little bit with his parents because his father was a lecturer at UCT, and then the family migrated to the USA when he was 7 years old. That guy only became a naturalized citizen of the USA 7 years ago in 2018. Now he is in a pole position to become the mayor of New York. So people accept that once you become a citizen, if you were born in China or whatever, because that is what we are doing. There was a scandal in Rundu some years ago when former governor Wakudumo brought a Chinese man as one of his unpaid advisors, somebody that he knew, somebody that is doing very well in business, and he said, look, I'm assembling a team of advisors and I want you to be part of it, free of charge. And people berated that poor man when that man came here in 1994 or something like that, became a Namibian citizen, and now we are still saying no, because he is looking differently, different from us, then he may not be granted the opportunity just to help his country. This is his country now.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with this xenophobic rhetoric, but strictly in law, there's nothing wrong that you would say Swartboy did. But he was wrong. He was completely out of order. Mm.
Devon Jebela, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin and actually pulling out those things that we need to hear or the public need to hear and for us to scrutinize them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, what moral standards should leaders, policymakers, and lawmakers uphold in the way they conduct themselves towards their fellows and the public at large, bearing in mind that they are in a position of influence? What of pan-Africanism that many once advocated for? Has it been long forgotten? Well, let's interrogate further with Hafni Ipinge.
Good afternoon, Hafni Ipinge, and welcome to On the Reading News Bulletin.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So, Ipinge, today we're talking about Pan-Africanism and the death of Pan-Africanism and Ubuntu. And why we're actually pulling it up as to say is because of the recent remarks by the president of LPM, Bernardo Swartboy, towards Health Minister Esperanza Luvindayo. Now, I want to get to the bottom of this from your opinion. What do you think about Pan-Africanism? Are we still upholding it, and especially leaders that are in a political landscape? Are we still upholding Pan-Africanism and Ubuntu?
Yes, I would say yes, because us as political movements, we are still maintaining that. I don't know about other opposition political parties, but us as the founder, SWAPO, and other political party in Africa, that our sister party, we are still maintaining that, and we want to maintain it, because we say, before you are a Namibian, you are an African. So if we talk about Pan-Africanism, we know Pan-Africanism, it's a general term for various movements in Africa that have as their common goals, the unity of Africans and the elimination of colonialism and white supremacy from the continent.
Yeah.
And to go further again, when we talk of Pan-Africanism, we talk of a nationalist movement that aims to encourage and strengthen the bond of solidarity between all indigenous people and diaspora of Africans.
Correct. Now, Hafni, bearing in mind that there are those who are in leadership are in a position of influence, what would you say should be the conduct, or how should they conduct themselves towards their followers and the public at large?
As African, so our ideology is clear. As African, our ideology is clear. The idea that people of African descent have common interest and should be unified. Historically, Pan-Africanism has often taken the shape of a political and cultural movement. So, and we have a flag, a symbol of African that is guiding us, which is red, green, and black. So the leaders that belongs to different political parties, regardless of your political affiliation. So when we talk of Ubuntu, so we talk of togetherness. One Africa, one continent, and one person. Mm-hmm. That's why we have a lot of common when it comes to African people, in our African countries, and African as a continent at large. So I don't think if somebody who is in the leadership of influence making some defamatory remarks against fellow Africans can take us anywhere. Mm-hmm. Because I know most of us, we are leaders, and we are groomed from our childhood, especially when we started to know about leadership. We started from the ground. And what we learn first is to understand what does Africanism mean. I mean, pan-Africanism mean.
Yeah.
So that we can, embrace each other as leaders, as young leaders of Namibia, and as young leaders of Africa. So, for us to grow in a proper manner as one Africa, one person, so then we have to understand first, before we become Namibians, we are Africans. That is where our strength is, because we were groomed with that ideology of pan-Africanism.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can
Before I actually pose the next question, let's take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back to continue right with this discussion that we are having right here. Now, remember, you can also partake in the news bulletin, partake in this conversation by dialing on 083-288-401. You are not left behind. Let's interrogate this for a better Namibia and a better society. With that being said, pause here. We'll see you after the commercial break. So don't go anywhere.
The best just got better. Bharti's fiber packages that give you unbeatable internet speeds at unbelievable prices. Enjoy speeds of up to 10 megabits per second, starting from just 500 Namibian dollars, excluding VAT. Sign up now for these fiber packages that are pushing the boundaries of innovation, so you can enjoy more connectivity, faster browsing at even more affordable prices. Visit your nearest Bharti's offices to find out more, or go to bharti.africa/Namibia to sign up online.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Let's now resume that conversation with Hafni Ipinge, who is a SWAPO party member and also member of SWAPO Central Committee and Politburo. Let's take a listen.
Political disagreements still be framed within a pan-African
ideology of pan-Africanism.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can political disagreements still be framed within a pan-Africanist ethic that uplifts rather than tears down?
So that's what I'm saying, regardless of our political affiliation. So we should not specifically look at the concept of pan-Africanism in isolation.
Yeah.
We should look into it broadly, because as a leader, as an upcoming leader, we have to understand where we are coming from, where we are now, and where we are going. Because if we start already divide each other, that this one is not Namibian, this one belongs to where, so the whole umbrella, it's African people united. That's why we have got an organization that called African Union, African Unity. So that is where our strength is. So we are one as African, regardless whether you are from which country. It's only because of the colonial borders that was demarcated, but that does not make us different from other Africans. That's why us as 54 member states,
mm-hmm.
So we are all African, and we are one person, without discriminating who is who, from which country is that person, and we are here to build each other. We are here to learn from each other. We are here to benefit from each other. We are here to build each other. And we are here to groom each other. And we are here to fight poverty, hunger, you know, imperialism, and all those sort of bad things that other people from other continents want to bring in our continent. But the umbrella here is that is African unity, you know, with our flag, with our own symbol, mm-hmm. with our own people, with our own natural resources, we all belong to one continent, and that is Africa.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ipinge, what does this political movement teach us about the work that still needs to be done to build a united, inclusive, and a respectful Namibian democracy?
I think we started as an African organization where we have people from different leadership that came from different countries. We have our own organization, whether it's the youth organization that we to strengthen our goals and objectives as an African young people. And we also have got the overall leadership that speaks about African unity. As much as us young people, we belong to different political parties, it should not divide us from us being or treat each other as one Africa from the same mothers, from the same father. Mm-hmm. So as young leader, we need to come together. And we are already doing this. So program, exchanging programs, through different programs in Africa, where we send young leaders to go and educate each other, to go and learn from each other, to go and discuss issues that are affecting Africa. So we're supposed now to draw a line there that when we are inviting each other, whether people are invited in Namibia, whether people are invited in Angola, whether people are invited in Mozambique, whether people are invited where within the border of Africa. So we are going to discuss African agenda. As we say, we are talking about now 2060 African Development Agenda to see the Africa that we want. Mm-hmm. But we are not going to wait for 2063. We already started. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand where we are, what are we doing, what we have a plan of action, strategic plans. We have them already in place that will strengthen all the young leaders of Africa to make sure that we embrace each other without discriminating each other, regardless of our country of birth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Ofeni Ipinge, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin. But before I actually do say goodbye, what message would you strongly want to send out to the Namibian people to bear in mind for us to be respectful towards one another in regards to Pan-Africanism as well as just being Namibians as well?
Yes. What I want to say is to tell the colleagues that before we are Namibians, we are Africans.
Mm.
So during the liberation struggle, when our elders were fighting for the liberation of this country, we were not fighting just within the border of Namibia. People were fighting also from outside.
Mm-hmm.
We were accommodated by our neighboring countries. We were accommodated by brothers and sisters from other part of the African
continent.
Not within the border.
Mm-hmm.
They feed us, they protected us, they give us shelters, they give us medication, they assisted us in everything. That's why we need to feel free wherever you are going, where whatever you are doing, and whatever action you are taking. You have to put into your consideration that Africa is united, Africa belongs to us, and we are all brothers and sisters, regardless of the country of origin. We are all Africa. We should just not concentrate on the borders that were demarcated during the during the colonialism. We have to make sure that we are all from the same. We are all from the same. It's only that the borders just came up because it's a political demarcation. But that did not divide us, that we are not Africans. So us as leaders of Africa, as leaders of Namibia, whether you are young, whether you are youth, whether you are the elder, so we should embrace each other with the spirit of Ubuntu.
Correct. Ipinge, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
You are welcome. Mm-hmm.
Also speaking to us now is Media Ombudsman John Nakuta on the importance of upholding media standards and ethical guidelines, as well as the cautiousness of not abusing our freedom of speech. Good afternoon, Mr. John, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
May I just make clarification? With reference to the interview or the press conference that was made by Mr. Bernardo Swartboy,
mm-hmm.
It's like, really, I'm not addressing it from my position of media ombudsman, more so because he's not representing any media house.
Yeah.
So I would be strictly speaking from the context of a social justice academic, specifically focusing on human rights. I'll bring the human rights angle into our debate.
Mm-hmm. Now, with
that
being
fine with you.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go ahead. Mr. John, what does this mean now to human rights? What does it speak, or what does it sort of take away from that?
Could you kindly be much more specific in terms of framing your question?
Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is, in regards to what LPM president had to say about the Minister of Health, what does this mean in terms of human rights standards, or what does it mean in terms of ethical standards?
Yeah. No, I totally understand. I want to add my voice to those ones that express their concern and dismay with regard to what the president of the LPM, or what, lack of a better word, president, but mm-hmm. what the member of parliament said in this particular case is very concerning as an African, but also as a human rights advocate. Why as an African? All of us know that Namibia was one of the very first countries that has signed up and ratified the African Free Trade Agreement, which talks about free movement of people and goods. But I'm not an economist. I am not going to go into the detail. But the result is that we see Africa as one common place where people can move freely.
Mm-hmm.
And zooming in onto the issue of the of the minister, and I'm talking under correction.
Yeah,
I've heard that she was born in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
to Congolese parents. If that is the case, then in terms of the Namibian constitution, she is a full Namibian by birth, entitled to all the freedoms, the rights, and everything else that attach to a Namibian.
Mm-hmm.
And even if she was not, so basically that is it, because a foreigner cannot serve is also wrong, even from that angle, because no foreigner may serve in the National Assembly of our country.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking it even from that angle to say that it's therefore wrong to refer to the minister as a Congolese because surely she must have some attachment to Namibia, either in the form of being born in Namibia or being a descendant, citizenship by descent. So it's wrong from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
Also from a human rights perspective, politicians should know that the right to freedom of expression, any right for that matter, does not apply unlimited. Any right goes together with certain restrictions, especially if you are in a position as senior as a party political leader or a politician for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot make inflammatory statement that borders, in my opinion, and I totally agree with those ones that says it borders to a xenophobic attack, and that can by those people that can be easily swayed by what they.
Post for me right there, so we have an ad coming up.
You save shelves are stocked with a variety of produce, all at prices that won't empty your wallet. 10 kilos top score super maize meal, 119.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilograms marathon white sugar, 98.99 Namibian dollars. 2.5 kilos Bokomo fed cooked flour, 39.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup, just 5.99 per packet. 2 liters Right Brand sunflower oil, only 68.99 Namibian dollars. You save your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Okay, and we are back now. Mr. John, you is continuing, you left off with speaking about human rights and how this touches on that. Kindly continue there where you left off.
I was just saying that politicians should know that every word of them, given their position in society, every word that they utter at the end of the day counts and carries value, and not even value, carries weight.
Mm-hmm.
So making irresponsible, inflammatory statements
mm-hmm.
cannot be happening so easily and willy-nilly. And I was also saying that I totally concur with those ones that are accusing the leader of the LBM of making xenophobic, what the statement that it made borders on xenophobic attacks. And xenophobia is not xenophobic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
is equivalent to hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And hate speech, in terms of our constitution, is not protected under the right to freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to say. And those are my 5 cents on the topic.
Mm-hmm. Now, last question to you before I do actually let you go, sir. In regards to, is there an uprise in abuse of freedom of speech, not just by those in the political landscape or perhaps those in leadership positions? Is there an increase in abuse of freedom of speech by us Namibians, making us now going towards where Namibia will no longer be actually considered as a place where we can freely express ourselves? And with that being said, what then needs to be done to ensure that people are in check?
Now, it's a very relevant question. And here I can put on my head as media ombudsman. we have noticed that there's a lot of abuses happening online, where people seemingly misinterpret their right to freedom of expression, and they think they can just say whatever that comes and goes on social media, on the social media space. And maybe one should use an opportunity like this, because you are asking what can be done. What can be done is educating the general public and those that may want to use under the guise of freedom of expression, make statements and say that no, every right is having a limitation. And in fact, in human rights law, we say the rights that people are having offline, they have the same rights online. So just as much as I have the right to human dignity, that you must respect my person offline, the very same right to human dignity I enjoy online. Similarly, the same right and obligation that I'm having as freedom of expression, yes, I have it offline and I have it online. But on both instances, I must express, make my expressions within the confines of the law. So this is what must be done. We must engage the public. You guys was in the media call. You are talking about MEL, meaning media literacy. And this is basically what needs to be done. We must educate the people about what may be said of online, so as to not to expose themselves to possible damages, because we have seen that people are going to court based on what has been said against them online, and they've won defamation cases on basically things that has been said online. So there's a lot of education that needs to be done, and I ask institutions or organizations such as yours, the media ombudsman, education institutions and others to begin really to take the issue of media literacy very seriously, especially when it comes to social media.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. John Nakuta, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay. And there we had it from Mr. John Nakuta, Media Ombudsman, sharing his knowledge and also his opinion with us. Now, with that being said, let's pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back very soon before you know it to continue with our news bulletin.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko berewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radar News Bulletin, where we take the news and analyze it and break it down and criticize what needs to be criticized. Positive criticism is also allowed. Now, you are also welcome to share your opinions and contributions right here on the Radar. The number in studio is 083-288-401. Now, move on with other related stuff. During a familiarization visit to the Vunguvungu Green Scheme on Wednesday, Kavango East Governor Julius Yamhambuka has briefed on the significant improvements and future plans at the agricultural project. Farm manager Flores Smith outlined how the schemes has grown into a key contributor to Namibia's food security, particularly in staple crop production. The farm, located just 10 kilometers east of Rundu, spans 773 hectares and includes land allocated to small-scale farmers. Now, according to Smith, the project focuses on the cultivation of maize, wheat, and vegetables. Thanks to new machinery, including a dedicated combined harvester and modern planters, maize yields have increased from 4.1 to 7.5 tons per hectare. Wheat cultivation has also expanded, with the area under production rising from 97 to 170 hectares. Now, despite the progress, Smith pointed out several ongoing challenges, including high fuel and electricity costs, delayed VAT refunds, and the absence of proper grain storage facilities. However, plans are in place to establish orchards, expand vegetable plots, and construct silos to support continued growth. With the backing of the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, the Green Scheme aims to help Namibia reduce its dependency on imported staple foods by 2030. Smith concluded by commending the commitment and the hard work of the farm workers and small-scale farmers whose efforts continue to drive the project's success. And now Namibia is navigating towards food security. These are the things that we would want to hear. Now let's take a listen to what Smith himself had to say. If we actually move to Smith, let's hear from Festus Nampala, a spokesperson of the Vunguvungu Small Scale Farmers.
As I know, the contract, we must produce at full capacity. Nobody should leave a little bit.
And he's right.
Yeah, but we are producing. We are producing from let me say we are planting in the first or maybe 20 from December. Now we are in June. We are busy harvesting. What a farmer may consume for that whole 6 months or 7 months? No income. We have families. Just for survival, and I'm working myself, and I still expect to recruit a seasonal worker from the community, and that seasonal worker is still on my shoulder. Then, somehow, somewhere, we agreed with the manager. Some farmers indicated, no, me, I'm just going to plant 5.5. Me, I'm going to produce 5.7. I know for me, just six hectares. And again, that now 5.5, if I'm producing the summer 5.5, that this is 0.5 hectare. Should just either, I have to make use of it for my survival.
No, my question, my brother, just follow the agreement. The agreement is a lawful state power document. For me, what I'm trying to understand is that if you are saying that at least you're supposed to amend the agreement, because if you continue violating what you have agreed, it will be a challenge. But if it was agreed that, okay, this line or two, three lines is yours for survival, I will not have a problem. But I will have a problem. That's why the manager is coming in. If it was agreed, all this work you are harvesting here is for business. Eh? But it's better for you to come as a group and say, no, instead of us to say, the whole line is for business. Can you give us at least? Then you agree, then you sign for it. But this line, we want it just for ourselves.
Okay.
You got me now?
Yes, Honorable Governor, last year, we wrote a letter to the ED when we just resigned our new contract right now, which expired, we wrote the letter for that contract to be amended. We highlighted or we pointed a lot of points that are threatening our production. Then it was just a verbal response through the manager, says apparently the ED said that it's not the one responsible for amending the letter, but it's the minister. So we don't know now where, how can we approach the minister now?
Yeah, but the video was not paid on. I think you just find a way how can you maximize the production without demanding the other remaining 32 hectares. Because for me personally, just like what I told Excellency, Honorable Sport was here, as well as the President Bomba, I think we, most of the government also become too greedy, but also think about the local communities. Remember that in all these small scale farmers here, the local communities of Ugugu are not there. But they gave them a hungry field. So for me personally, if you ask me an honest opinion, I would suggest that the other 32 hectares, maybe we can accommodate some of these local communities to come in as well. Because they can't be reduced to be spectators. They just say they first and then they look in the crop. When their mothers give their land, I think let us not be too greedy on that. Let us be content with what we have. And then also accommodate other people also to come on board. Because the other 32 hectares, I would have loved to see even some small scale farmers coming from this village. So the trade should have been there. Because when they see that the fence, some of these conflicts, that's the reason why in Africa there are a lot of conflicts. Because some of these small issues, we take it for granted. But I understand in your case, that one can fight with the ministers who are getting power in. That's a different issue, but you must not be too greedy and say the other 30 hectares also come to you. Because I understand in agreement, one farmer 6 hectares, isn't it?
Mm.
And you have 10 farmers, isn't it? And you have 60 hectares. And you are demanding another 32. These 32 must also go to the locals, also give them a humble field, so that they can also benefit. This is what I'm talking about. Let's share the things that we have. Not everything that's for you, ask yourself. It's not right.
Yes, Honorable Councillor, that one, that 32 we are talking right now, it's not that it's still us to use it or not. That one is still the ministry to manage it or whoever authority that can manage it. So, but the painful part whereby we are like forced that, no, you guys just produce maize there, then wait for the harvest for the ministry, then until when you get your profit. Which we can go even up to 8 months without getting anything. I think even people who are living in prison, people living in prison, they are surviving better than us who are producing food. And that is only happening, Honorable Governor, that's only happening in Kabago East region. They are green steam like a Tuda. The people, small scale farmers are free producing the way they want. But only Uvungu Vungu, Togarinena and Shatikongoro, and those are the one of the managers that said that letter to the ministry. So are we not, is this green scheme not like this, at the other side, other direction, other regions?
Good.
So that's our real concern.
Okay, good. That's why I said, submit or give me that letter of yours.
Mm.
Then we'll see what we can do. And you are from which side now?
Yeah. The small scale farmer.
Okay.
The point is a bit different than what they're saying.
Okay.
Thank you for
your name.
My name is
Makai. I grew up here in Esosi. I was trained as a farmer at Mashare Agricultural College. So I will just cut the story short. Some years back, 2016, Mr. Ponte was here. That time, Mr. Flores was not around. So I planted maize. Then my crop was attacked by insect, then I lost. When I lost, the government came in, they said, okay, they will help every farmer who's like in debt. Then when they did that, so people who were submitting name now, those who are head office now, who submitted names there to help those farmers to pay for them, they took out my name. I remember I was having one of my colleagues, a previous Peter and others, they were helped, they paid for them. So mine, they left it. So I stayed like that. The next year, when I planted, so when the loan got finished, Agribank stopped funding me not to get anything. So I stayed like 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, but Mr. Pondi was around. So without farming anything. Later on, we agreed with the manager who was around, Mr. Mwanza. I just planted 6 hectares. Now to plant 3 hectares. That's 3 hectares. Every year I plant, I take everything, not even $1. I just have to buy my own inputs to produce. Later on, I came to 4 hectares. Later on, I came to 6 hectares full. From there, the debt went up to 300 something thousand with Agribank. So last season, when we planted, last season, I tried to cover some. I paid 100,000, something like that, to pay Agribank. When the minister came here, that time it was Mr. Kalen Schwartwey. So I brought that point to him. They said, okay, I asked them, it was like a bit now, like discrimination or whatsoever. I asked them, like, why it's different? Those colleagues who were helped, they are, some they were Caprivian and some they were Vambos. So me, I was a Kavango, you took me out, but we paid for some only. Why? But all of us were in the same shoe. Then they said, write a letter and everything. I did everything they asked, I sent until today. Nothing happened. I still owe Agribank 200,000 something maybe then. I don't know if it went up or it just, for them, they were saying they will try to cover me now to do like what they did to other farmers. They never did that. That's why now I brought to you, maybe you and the councillor, you can help me to get a solution, to talk to them to see if they did pay or not. Because until now, I never get any information. I came to the accountant here, Ms. Lovisa. She never even got updated that. After me, I paid that amount. Did they pay also or not?
The
now. Sorry?
We should pay you. The ministry now.
Yeah, the ministry, because they were saying they have to pay some percent. Yes, and you have to pay some percent also. So they were saying a farmer, it was like 15% or something, but I paid more than 15. I paid because I paid 100 something. So, but until today, the secretary for the minister, it was Mrs. Esther at head office. I used to call her every time. Later on now, even I tried the number, even to ask that, how far did you go? The number doesn't go through again. That's why maybe you can come in and help a bit.
Just want to later, just like what the government said, but
the government
can also send from you also, one letter as well.
Okay.
One thing, just an advice. When you make reference of a person from that tribe or region,
mm-hmm.
I think next time I'm going to say Caprivian, Pambolin,
yes.
Change. If you have a problem, go to the councillor's office. From the councillor, you go to the governor's office. Why are we, even though it is, your contract was signed by a person who is in Windhoek, and some of these colleagues of mine, they never been to Vungu Vungu. Even if you are complaining, this person will not even know what you are complaining about.
Okay, and those were discussions in regards to farmers at Vungu Vungu. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be bringing you what's making headlines today in regards to economic indicators.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba. Where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. Now for some economic indicators. Of course, we're starting off with the Namibian dollar, comparing it to other currencies. Now, one US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 70 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 71 cents. One pound sterling will get you 24 Namibian dollars and 26 cents, while 1 Japanese yen will get you 0.12 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan equals you 2 Namibian dollars and 47 cents, while 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 56 cents. 1 Swiss franc will get you 22 Namibian dollars and 8 cents. Arabian GDP growth hits a 5-quarter low. Now, Arabian's gross domestic product rose by 3.4% year-on-year in the first quarter of 2025, marking the slowest pace since the fourth quarter of 2023. Slowly, from an upwardly revised 4.4% in the previous quarter, household consumption increased by 2.5% and government spending rose by 7.3%. Meanwhile, gross fixed capital formation grew by 2.9%. On the external front, exports advanced 9.5%, outpacing a 1.7% rise in imports. On a seasonally adjusted quarterly basis, the economy grew by 0.7% in the first quarter of 2025. Aluminium futures rose toward $2,580 per ton in June, testing the highest level since the month of March, as risks to raw material supply were combined with the bets that manufacturing demand will remain robust in this year. Uncertainty on the global supply of bauxite persisted amid the Guinean government's disagreement with Emirates Global Aluminium's mining operations in the country, jeopardizing mining licenses from one of the world's largest providers of raw material. Now, this was magnified by limited exports out of Guinea during May, driving imports from China to fall 21% from the previous month and forcing the world's top aluminium producers to buy raw materials, from elsewhere. A sharper increase was prevented by the increase in open tonnage in the LME inventions this year, despite the risk of squeezes by the large positions taken by Mercer. The FNB BER Consumer Confidence Index for South Africa came out at minus 10 in the second quarter of 2025, rebounding from a near two-year low of minus 20 in the previous three-month period. Now, while the index is still well below the historical average of minus 1, the latest readings suggest a modest easing in consumer pessimism. All three sub-indices of the CCI recovered most lost ground during the second quarter, with the economic outlook sub-index rebounding from minus 32 to minus 18, supported by the cancellation of planned tax hikes and the resolution of the coalition's budget impasse. Now, the household finances sub-index improved from minus 1 to 9, while the sub-index measuring the appropriateness of the present time to buy durable goods rebounded from minus 26 to 21. Still on South Africa, South Africa's PPI inflation cooled down to 0.1% in May 2025 from 0.5% in each of the previous 2 months and below market estimates for a 0.7% rise. Now, this was the lowest reading since November 2024, largely influenced by a sharper decline in prices of coke, petroleum, chemical, rubber, and plastic products. Minus 6.4% versus minus 5.5% in April, of which fuels such as petrol at minus 18.7% and diesel at minus 15.1% On a monthly basis, producer prices fell by 0.3%, marking the first decrease since last October after a 0.5% rise in the prior month. And lastly, gold rose past $3,340 per ounce on Thursday, aligned with the aggressive decline for the US dollar amid fresh dovish signs for the Federal Reserve. Now, US President Trump noted he could announce the new Fed chairman as early as September or October, reducing Chairman Powell's influence before his term expires in June and strengthening the influence of the incoming nominee. Now, Trump is expected to favor a dovish central banker due to the president's call for lower rates, reducing the opportunity cost of holding non-interest bearing. Also on the monetary front, Chairman Powell noted that a backdrop with softer tariffs than those announced in April are expected to be disinflationary by the Fed, favoring an outlook that drives the FOMC to loosen financial conditions. Now let's pause here and make room for a scheduled commercial break. When we do return, I'll be bringing you news beyond the borders. Stay tuned right here on the Reader News Bulletin. Also do take note that you can also partake in the News Bulletin. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save and you save.
Ipuranengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko berewa. Nora hetatu natu. Bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now this is a point where we take you to news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, Cape Town, whereby it's battling flooding amidst a cold front.
Staying with us, humanitarian aid is being delivered to communities affected by heavy rainfall across parts of the Western Cape. Hundreds of people, in especially low-lying informal areas, have spent a cold and miserable night as stormwater flooded roads and settlements. In Saldanha, on the west coast, numerous settlements have been submerged in water. Our reporter Vanessa Puna and video journalist Clinton Cerf have more.
Authorities in Saldanha Bay and the Cape West Coast have activated emergency protocols, this amid heavy rainfall as well as localized flooding. A year in the Middelpoort informal settlement behind me, we see teams active on the ground to pump the water that had fallen overnight. And of course, for more information, I'm joined now by the Saldanha Bay Municipality, actually the Mayor, Andre Trutta, for information in terms of the flooding. Mayor, very warm good day to you. So of course, we know that a few hundred homes have been affected here, informal homes in the Middelpoort informal settlement. You say that this rainfall really started overnight into the early hours of this morning. Can you tell us what the situation is like here at the moment?
Yeah, at the moment it's actually better than yesterday. The rain started early yesterday morning. By late afternoon it reached a critical point where it was really high. In fact, it came over the bonnet of my 4x4. And this morning, I came here early, it was actually a lot down from the pumping overnight from our team. But then we had a few really hard showers, which we're unused to. This is not a high rainfall area. So our systems is not designed to take huge inflow of water. But we already yesterday activated our disaster management jock. So our disaster management manager, Carol Ferris, has activated her team. And she then speaks to the town engineers and to all our staff from our community services, and all of them work together in order to alleviate it. She looks at the humanitarian side of it, and obviously our community services look at the engineering side of it.
So when we talk about the numbers of people that have been affected, I know you've mentioned that the district municipality will be flying drones over a little later on today. What has the initial estimates been in terms of people affected by this localized flooding?
It varies on who you ask. So some people are saying 600. So what we have now, we've asked all the councillors. So we've asked the ward councillor. Last night I was here, I spoke to the community personally. I spoke to the ward councillor. I spoke to the other PR councillors, and I've asked them to formulate lists for us. Then our normal protocol is we take those lists, hand it over to disaster management. Disaster management will verify that, because we want to be very sure that the aid gets to the right people. Obviously, the biggest fear at this moment, the rain will subside, but cold is coming. So if you're wet and your house is wet and your mattress is wet, then obviously there is a threat.
So let us talk about that aid. I know that even in other municipalities like the city of Cape Town, it's called upon the humanitarian aid organizations to assist with that humanitarian aid. I know that you've mentioned just now that the gift of the givers, for example, will be on site here today. Let's talk about that kind of humanitarian aid and what exactly will be required and also be offered to the affected residents.
At the moment, I've just actually spoken a few minutes ago before I spoke to you. I spoke to Ali from Gift of the Givers. They are bringing in, as far as I know, their main source of what they're bringing in is mattresses and blankets. Yesterday, I asked them for about 600 blankets. I'm not sure how many they will bring. But we also have got an amazing community. We see Harvest immediately stepped forward and said they will help us. Our local Viscus Mall has phoned me now, before I stopped here, and say how can they help. So we'll look to them for bathroom packs and things for the ladies, also nappies, things like that you wouldn't normally give. We've also got, last night I did a Facebook post, and I've actually put out the numbers, because we've got a fully fledged disaster management center in Saldanha Bay, and our team.
Meanwhile, Kenya protests anniversary teens violent.
guest, Travers Bigambo, is a lawyer and governance analyst and joins us now live from Kenya. Travers, it's great to have you on the SABC News Channel. Thanks very much indeed for making time to speak to us. Before we get into some of the legal issues at play here, let me just get a sense as a start of what you reckon Kenya is like the morning after.
Well, there is so much of the after effect of yesterday's demonstrations. There are lots of fumes of tear gas in the air, a couple of, you know, roads still having boulders, and the tires that were burned yesterday. But of course, a bit of anxiety with lots of businessmen and women counting their losses across close to 27 counties in the country, where lots of shops were looted, property destroyed, families are having some of their members injured, and some having lost their family members. So there's still a bit of anxiety, and government, civil society organizations are still trying to put their numbers together, checking with the hospitals to establish the accurate number of those that were injured, and also the security agencies trying to analyze the situation as it played out yesterday.
Mm. Of course, yesterday was about marking a year since the anti-tax bill protest rocked parts of Nairobi. We know the bill has since been withdrawn, and the protest has really morphed into an outcry about how police respond to civilians, to put it quite plainly. What's your sense about whether or not police are getting better at, you know, clamping down on protests like what we saw yesterday? Perhaps clamping down is not the right term, but responding to protests like what we saw yesterday, given, of course, what's at the heart of the discontent?
I think from a comparative point of view, I would say that there was a slight change this year, because on the eve of the demonstrations, we saw the Inspector General of Police with other police agencies and senior officials outlining and giving guidelines to the protesters and organizers to follow a particular path and guidelines. Of course, that is provided for in the laws in Kenya, in the Public Order Act, particularly Section 5. And we saw, of course, various agencies, organizations, civil society notifying the police of the intended demonstrations. The police were emphatic that they should be peaceable and unarmed. So that was seen. However, on the morning of the demonstrations yesterday, a number of roads leading to Parliament and the State House were barricaded. I think this was a proactive action to stop the protesters from getting to certain protected areas such as the State House, etc. So we saw that. Nonetheless, the other thing that we can indicate is that there was a bit of restraint by police officers in terms of using firepower. Those still cases of live ammunition and rubber bullets and tear gas were witnessed to be used yesterday. And that's why we saw a number of reported allegedly killed by police. Fatalities as of now are estimated to be 11, and various injuries of even police officers. We saw cases where police officers who were armed but were attacked by citizens, but they did not use the ammunition to fire at the citizens. This was reported in Kajiado County in a town called Kitengela, where three female officers were attacked by civilians. On a certain part of town still, we saw a police officer who was attacked by civilians, but did not use ammunition. We saw a section where, in a county called Meru, where an officer commanding station was engaging the protesters in conversation. So we saw various places where police were engaging in civil ways with the civilians. So the deaths, of course, are regrettable, but this demonstrates that it is possible for police to continue restraining themselves in using excessive force and power against demonstrators.
We saw the state trying to respond to this, I suppose, in their own ways by giving a decree for there to be a ban on the broadcast of these protests yesterday. My understanding is that that decision was then overturned by the high courts. help us understand how that's actually affected the demonstration, if in any way at all?
Well, this speaks to the character of Kenya's democracy, because media freedom is an integral part of democracy and democratic progress. The fabric of democracy cannot be perfected or perfect without media freedom, and the fundamental rights and freedoms enshrined in Kenya's Chapter 4 of the Bill of Rights, the right to protest, to demonstrate, but peaceable and unarmed. However, from a critical analytical perspective, I would say that the events of yesterday are calling upon government, upon opposition leaders and political parties, and even civil society organizations to be more alert and conscious about the nationhood of Kenya's nation state and the aspect of exercising fundamental rights without causing harm, injury, and even further economic injustices. As a matter of fact, we have seen an escalation of economic injustices when shops, supermarkets are vandalized and looted by demonstrators. When we see roads being barricaded, when demonstrators carry matchboxes and lighters, when they barricade roads and hamper the flow of traffic, when they interfere with the peace of those who are not part of the demonstrations, then the demonstrators also are infringing on the rights of those who do not want to be a part of the demonstrations. When political leaders in the opposition are using incendiary remarks to incite citizens into causing chaos and mayhem and attempt to overturn government against the constitutional order, it does not speak to the rights that are protected. So I think this...
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar. Now do stay tuned for the voters' education preparation program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Very, very good